Welcome to Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, the weekly podcast. Barack Obama was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2009. One account said at the time that, among other things, the Norwegian Committee must have considered his efforts to build understanding between America and the Muslim world. Well, maybe so, but Syria is the seventh mostly Islamic country that Obama has bombed in his 6 years. One has to wonder whether Obama is more interested in softening up Syria for regime change than in battling ISIS itself. According to Bloomberg, the United States dropped as many bombs and missiles on ISIS positions in Syria in its first night of airstrikes as it did in the entire first month of attacks on ISIS in Iraq. Dr. Paul, after the hopeful signs when the American people resisted a new Obama war in Syria this time last year, all of this is certainly a little bit discouraging.
Yeah, it sure is. And of course, propaganda is the tool. It's been known for a long, long time. You have to put it out there and get the people's emotions stirred and get their hatreds up and have a Hitler to detest. And I guess it wasn't too hard to find something bad about what these guys have done. But the real turning point was the accusation that they beheaded two journalists. And now there's a lot of questions on whether that was all staged, whether it was true or not. And in comparison to what, you know, in comparison to how many people our bombs kill, they never bring that up. But anyway, it was able to change a lot of opinion. But the one thing that when this opinion changed, there was also an announcement that a significant number, it was either 12 or 15 Saudis were beheaded for crimes which weren't all that offensive. They weren't capital crimes. They were more religious crimes. And yet they're our best friends. We send them money to help train these rebels, and we've been friends of theirs forever. And of course, Saudis were very much involved in 9/11. And that's the other thing about the Syria thing, you know, the big discussion on where does he get this authority? Well, one is the imminent attack, which is a total farce. They just changed the definition of imminent. You know, if they're sort of planning to do something someday, that can be construed according to their regulations that it is an imminent attack and therefore the president has the authority. Because under our Constitution, the president does. If somebody's about to march in and make a landing in our country, the president has a right to retaliate. But this has nothing to do with reality. But the other thing that they've used as an excuse, the legal excuse for this, which, you know, is just political justification, and that is the use of military force coming, you know, after 9/11. And, of course, that is very, very precisely written. It is said, you know, it's given the president the authority to go after those individuals who were directly related to 9/11. Now, they're still claiming that because 9/11 had something to do with al-Qaeda and al-Qaeda had something to do with it being morphed into another independent group called ISIS, therefore, he has this authority, which I think is a total farce, you know, based on the merits of it. It just doesn't mean anything. But anyway, they do it with a straight face and they say, well, we have this justification. And, you know, there's always this argument when things like this comes up on whether the president is disobeying the war power resolution that came about after, you know, Vietnam. And none of the presidents like this because they think they hamstring it. Libertarians don't like it because it gives the presidents too much leeway. And everybody seems to think it should be rewritten in their direction, you know, to clarify this. But because they admit it's confusing on what it actually says. But I wonder why they don't say, well, instead of rewriting a resolution that should have never been written, why don't they say, well, maybe we can clarify it by reading. Maybe we ought to read the Constitution because that was accepted by the country. And, of course, it is very, very clear when you go to war, you know, the Congress has to declare the war. But they totally ignore this. They keep talking about, you know, we have the authority. We can do it. We need to kill them. They're monsters. And like you indicated in your introduction, they reversed the attitude a year ago. We were winning this fight, and the American people heard about it, and they rejected it, and the president realized he couldn't get the support and withdrew his request from the Congress, and they never voted on it. But now the consensus is so great, hey, they're not going to vote on it either because, you know, because the Congress is silent and they're going to give them the money, there's no problem whatsoever. So it's a tragic example on how we just get involved and continue these wars forever and ever, and how we spend this money, have no consideration. So to me, it's just a reflection of a bad foreign policy that the neoconservatives won't consider as possibly being part of the problem. And yet we sense that certainly the younger generation is tired of all this. They don't want to fight these wars, and they don't want to inherit these wars, and they don't want to inherit the debt. But at the same time, it seems like the officials and the media, this is the real challenge for us, is how close the government edicts are to all the major medias. I mean, do we hear much of a different stories from MSNBC and also from Fox? No. And how anxious were the leadership of both parties in the Congress to say, well, the Congress is going to vote this token acceptance of training and going, expanding our role in Syria. And before it was even passed, Reid said, oh, that's okay. We'll pass it in the Senate, too. So, leadership and the government officials, the military-industrial complex, all the media, all these people go along with it. And yet, it's a tough sell, but I actually still believe that the majority of the American people, if they have any iota of the truth, they would be on our side and say this is totally unnecessary and doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, of course, it's sold to the American people as an attack on ISIS, an attempt to roll back ISIS. But you have to wonder what the real target is. Mm-hmm. Once the Saudis were brought on board to participate in some fashion in this, Syria has long been the preferred target of the Saudi monarchy. And so you have to wonder if ultimately the objective and the reason that they're participating is because it will extend to taking out Assad, and maybe that explains the massive bombing that has eclipsed all of the bombs that we've launched on ISIS in Iraq so far.
Right. And, you know, if ISIS was the real problem, there are several thousand, 10, 20, 30, we don't know, but that's very small. If he was disturbing the community over there, there are millions and millions of Arabs and other Muslims that don't like him. So why would we need the outsiders? But if ISIS was really, the problem and we were truly worried about it, why would we be at the same time fighting Syria and Assad? You know, when he was running his country as his form of dictatorship, you didn't have ISIS in there. It was only when we went in there and decided we'd join the rebellion to get rid of Assad that ISIS, became a prominent force, just like in Iraq. We went in there to stop Al-Qaeda, the people who bombed us on 9/11. It was all a lie. And now, guess what? Not only do we have the Al-Qaeda there, we have ISIS there. And so I think asking the question, as you do, what is the real agenda is pretty important. And there are times when I think, we don't hear enough about Saudi Arabia. And now we do know that 15 out of the 19 hijackers were Saudis. And yet we do nothing, check it out. If we were so concerned about the evil doing of radical Islam, and we are concerned about the violence ISIS perpetrate, but what about the violence that Saudi Arabia perpetrates? Of course, my argument, as well as so many others, is that's a good reason why we shouldn't get involved in a civil war, which is not only civil strife, but it's a religious war been going on probably over 1,000 years, that we get over there and just totally muddy the waters and expend a lot of life and limb and also American wealth, too.
Well, it seems fairly clear that the early support and perhaps training of ISIS to begin with was flowing out of the Gulf states and out of places like Saudi Arabia. So the picture is much more involved than the American people are led to believe. But I wanted to ask you about one other thing that others have commented on that is certainly enough to at least provoke my curiosity, and that has to do with the president's appearance at the United Nations the other day. And he highlighted what he called the three most significant global threats in this order: Ebola, and then Russian aggression in Europe, and then third on the list, and these things are all carefully designed and thought out in wordsmith, but third on the list was the issue of the terrorists or ISIS in Syria. So that's down below Russian aggression in Europe.
Yes, and Ebola is a significant event. But once again, put it into perspective. You know, several thousands have died. It's a very, very serious illness. But I'm not quite sure, even as somebody involved in politics as well as in medicine, I'm not sure how 3,000 Army personnel going over there is going to do a whole lot to solve this problem. Who knows? It may contribute to spreading the problem for all I know. But, you know, and once again, I think that's a fake issue, too, because if you look at the number of people who get malaria, 200 million a year, and 1.2 million die every year. So if they're really worried about people dying of diseases, why don't they do anything? Because governments have gotten in the way because we've removed the best spray to kill mosquitoes. And that, of course, is a controversial subject on what sprays you can use. But literally, they don't even talk about that. It's a non-issue. But this one, you know, can catch the attention, spend more money. And it sort of fits the role that the United States is the not only the policeman of the world, it's the savior of the world. We take care of everybody and everything. And of course, what is dependent on that, of course, is that the dollar holds up. And that's why I'm very suspicious that on purpose, the world does their very best to make the dollar work because we get to print the gold and we're willing to pay it out. And as long as people are receiving some of this gold, they're not going to attack the dollar because that might hurt themselves. So we can say, well, we're going to take care of Ebola and we can decide that Russia is an aggressor. But of course, if you look at that, you find out that we were involved in starting that whole mess by being on the side of overthrowing an elected leader, having a coup at Kiev. But nevertheless, every single day as the president, he keeps repeating Russian aggression, Russian aggression. And they're on their doorstep of their country. We're 6,000 miles away. But nobody here will say, well, maybe we shouldn't be over there. And of course, the ISIS problem is just a continuation. The other thing that bothers me about Al-Qaeda and ISIS and this justification of the authority coming because we're going after Al-Qaeda, one thing is there's a misleading interpretation of Al-Qaeda. It's like claim, well, bin Laden was in charge of it, and he was a monolith, and he was in charge of all the units, and it was one unit, and there's no truth to that. It seems like ISIS might be better organized as a unit than Al-Qaeda. But Al-Qaeda was never, you know, an organization. There's so many different factions that are sick and tired of us who are sick, you know, striking out. And they see themselves as people who are willing to use violence to get rid of people who have invaded and occupy their country. But that, when you say that, you're suggesting, well, maybe it's America's fault. Well, it's American politicians' fault that they go over there and do these things. But it certainly is a mess that we should avoid, and which we could if we really wanted to.
Bombing 7 Islamic countries over 6 years, one has to wonder what kind of blowback we have in our future. Dr. Paul, thank you for another informative conversation and a great podcast today. And we'd like to thank you for listening. We'd like to thank you as well for telling all your friends about the weekly podcast. I'm Charles Guyette.